My very dear friend Allison is one of the kindest and most thoughtful and brightest people you will ever know. She and her husband Fred are godparents to Sarah, and we wish almost every day that they did not live on the other side of the country. A few years ago, we went to their house to spend vacation with them in New England. And one morning, before we set out, Allison and I walked out to the mailbox. And as we walked, she gave a little shiver of excitement. And I looked at her funny, and she said, "My Fitbit went off." And I looked at her funny again, and she said, "Well, I set my daily goal of steps at 500 so that I reach my goal every day." It gives her this small sense of joy every day when her Fitbit buzzes to tell her she's met her goal, and everything after that is bonus. Now, most of us take the advice that we're supposed to walk 10,000 steps a day. And if you wear a Fitbit or use your iPhone tracker or go the old-fashioned route of wearing a pedometer, you don't always have that sense of accomplishment that you've reached your 10,000 steps for the day, all of which has led me to thinking about this parable. As with the parables of Jesus, there are at least 9 sermons in this text. At one point during the week, I thought about doing 3 mini sermons, and then reason took over. So I want to spend a little time with you this morning thinking about joy and abundance and what we do to make those things happen and what God does to make those things happen. Jesus tells this parable about a sower who really, if you know anything about farming, is a bit careless with this seed. But nonetheless, some of the seed reaches the good soil, and the yield of grain is extraordinary, 30, 60, and 100-fold. Normal yield would only be 3 to 10-fold. One of the things this parable teaches is about abundant joy that gives life. I will never forget a video I once saw, and I hope if you haven't seen it, you will go home and look it up. It takes place in the square of the city of Sabadell near Barcelona, and a man in a tuxedo walks out into the square carrying an upright bass, and he puts his hat on the ground, and he begins playing the opening strains of the last movement of Beethoven's 9th symphony. Dun 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 dun. People smile. A few walk by, toss some coins in the hat, and then a cellist appears and starts playing with the man. Then people playing violas and violins join in, and suddenly a guy who's just standing there wearing a striped polo shirt starts conducting them all. And then before you know it, the brass has arrived, French horn and trumpet and trombone, and then flutes and clarinets and oboes. And then some guy carrying mallets goes to kettle drums that seem to have appeared out of nowhere. And then, if you know that piece of music, there are those 3 little pauses. Da-da, da-da-da, da-da-da. And then people who you thought were bystanders burst into singing Ode to Joy. I weep every time I watch that. And I imagine what it must have been like to have been a tourist in that square that day. You go to the piazza, you're expecting to get a cup of coffee and a pastry, and instead, you get Beethoven's 9th. What an abundance of joy and surprise, at least 100-fold. Now, maybe you also heard a story this week that didn't start out so well. On a beach in Florida, a woman heard her 2 children who were playing in the water start screaming, and she realized that they had gotten caught up in a riptide. She and 3 other members of her family went out to save them, but they too got caught up in the current. The woman said, "I honestly thought I was going to lose my family that day. It was like, oh God, this is how I'm going." A different woman on the beach didn't realize what all the commotion was about at first. She thought that somebody had seen some very interesting marine animal. But then she realized that it was an emergency, and since there was no lifeguard on duty, she and her husband decided that they were going to help. "These people are not drowning today," she said. "It's not happening. We're going to get them out." So for 20 minutes, that first woman and her family were fighting for their lives. Meanwhile, all of the beachgoers began to form a human chain that got longer and longer as that first couple swam out. Dozens of strangers worked together to save these swimmers who were in distress. The brigade eventually reached 80 people with locked arms who reached these people. They grabbed the children first and passed them down until everyone was saved. Those people thought they were going to die. And instead, because of courage and quick wits and a community of strangers, everyone lived. Another huge yield. I think about those experiences of surprising abundance in my own life, how at the age of 37, I didn't think I would ever get married or be a parent. How in January of 2011, Greg and I had resigned ourselves to spending another 10 years in Wisconsin, living out our plan B. And how I thought that a limp and chronic hip pain would be my companion for the rest of my life. And then God showered grace on me through a friend who worked very hard to get the two of us together, and through a pastor nominating committee that decided to give a chance to this clergy couple thing, and to a doctor that knew what was right to do for me. And so here I am with Greg and with Sarah, and without pain, with you today. And still, I know that the world and life can throw us some pretty ugly curveballs sometimes. If we counted all the pain we have known in this room, the weight would be unbearable. And I think about somebody living in Syria 20 years ago and where they might be today. And I think about schoolgirls in Nigeria and where they might be today. And I think about the man I passed in front of Pete's this week. He was filthy. I don't know when the last time was that he bathed. He had wild eyes. And when he grinned at me with a toothless grin, my heart just stopped. Because sometimes we don't get Beethoven's Ninth. And sometimes there isn't a human chain of rescuers. Sometimes there's only ominous, empty silence. It's terrifying to be that alone and vulnerable. Lord Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, who served as the chief rabbi for several years in the United Kingdom, gave a recent TED Talk where he talked about being alone and vulnerable and how we might face the future without fear. He said in part, and I'm going to quote him a bit, he begins and he says, "So is there something we can do, each of us, to be able to face the future without fear? I think there is. And one thing is to ask, what do people worship? People have worshiped so many different things, the sun, the stars, the storm. Some people worship many gods, some one, some none. What do we worship?" he asks. "I think future anthropologists will take a books that we read on self-help, self-realization, self-esteem. They'll look at the way we talk about morality as being true to oneself. This way we talk about politics as the matter of individual rights. And they'll look at this wonderful new ritual we have created called the selfie. And I think they'll conclude that what we worship in our time is the self, the me, the I." Rabbi Sacks continues, "But don't forget that biologically we are social animals. We've spent most of our evolutionary history in small groups. We need those face-to-face interactions where we learn the choreography of altruism and where we create those spiritual goods like friendship and trust and loyalty and love that redeem our solitude. When we have too much of the I, and too little of the we can find ourselves vulnerable, fearful, and alone. And then near the end of the talk, he says, "Do you know something? My favorite phrase in all of politics, very American phrase, is we the people. Why we the people? Because it says that we all share collective responsibility for our collective future. And that's how things really are and should be." The orchestra in that square outside of Barcelona and those 80 people rescuing the others took collective responsibility for others. And I think there is great hope in that. And I have not forgotten about the parable of the sower. A farmer would never plant a single seed. A farmer plants many, and those plants do not grow on their own. They have to be sown. They need dirt and water and sun and some tending. The yield of one stalk of grain does no one any good. Many seeds, nurtured and harvested, produce an abundant yield. Likewise, we do not experience joy of our own making. I think the primary author and giver of joy is God, who created us to love and to enjoy the creation. But we also need each other. We need people who are like thorny ground to us so that we're prepared for opposition and debate and discussion. We need people who shower us with the waters of grace so that we can move on from the past and thrive. We need people who put some heat on us so that we have to take stock of what's important to us and do something about it. You and I cannot always manufacture joy in abundance, but we can live in such a way that the ground is fertile for joy to grow. And I want to leave you with one more idea from Rabbi Sacks about how we might begin to do that. He says, "So here's my simple suggestion. It might just change your life, and it might help to begin to change the world. Do a search and replace operation on the text of your mind, and wherever you hear the word self, substitute the word other. So instead of self-help, other help. Instead of self-esteem, other esteem. And if you do that, you will begin to feel the power of what is for me one of the most moving sentences in all of religious literature. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me." Friends, let us face the future not with fear, but with joy, and most importantly, with each other. Amen.